Our evening began in Peter Sechelle's comfortable study in his New York townhouse, where the candlelight was just right, the hi-fi was in the background, and the wine was delicious.
What's the secret, Peter?
Naturally, I'll say it's the wine.
It does go well with a chicken.
Delicious again, Peter.
Ladies and gentlemen, August Donnelly.
Folks, you're tuned into Full Frontal on CHRW 94.9 FM. I am August Donnelly, and I bid you a good day or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are. With me, as usual, is the one and only Full Frontal intern, Barb.
Well, hello there, August.
How are you doing, Barb?
I'm doing very well, and I want to wish everybody a happy Canada Day for tomorrow.
Absolutely. Happy Canada Day. Our nation is going to be 141 years old tomorrow. I hope everyone's had a great long weekend thus far, and those that are taking holidays are enjoying them. And if you're going to be out and about enjoying the festivities or continuing the festivities you've already been enjoying, remember, if you're driving, don't drink, and if you drink, don't drive.
And I would sing happy birthday to our beautiful nation, but as you know, I have a terrible voice.
I personally wouldn't say you have a terrible voice. I would just say that you have a voice that isn't fit for radio. I would say that you have a face for radio.
Thank you.
Anyway, folks, like I said, it's Canada Day tomorrow, so there's all kinds of craziness going on. Let's get right down to the show. Right off the bat, first and foremost, there is a matter of great importance that I just want to take a few seconds to address here. We here at Full Frontal want to say a formal and affectionate goodbye to Jessica Burgess. She was the news director here at CHRW for the past several years, and today, June the 30th, is officially her last day, and we wish her the best of luck in her future endeavors abroad. It was actually Jess who brought me on here at CHRW a year ago now, and I just want to thank her again for giving me the opportunity to do my thing since so many executive types at radio and television stations are intimidated by brash and candid fellows like myself. So anyway, Jess is off to New Zealand, and I hope that fate and fortune smile upon her while down under. So fare thee well, Jessica Burgess. Aside from that, we've got a great show all lined up, as per usual. This week, I've got an interesting and talented and gregarious, and I can't think of enough positive adjectives for this young man, this fellow who's on the show. London artist and musician Scott Mitchell is on the show. He is also the MC formerly known as Scott Free. He won the DMC freestyle comp that was actually held in London right here back in 2003. He's an acclaimed producer, MC, etc., etc. He's worked in collaboration with some great acts. So Scott Mitchell will be on the show coming up in the latter half.
Looking forward to it.
So, folks, to be honest, we don't really have time to get down to the listener email. It's just a rushed show this time, and I apologize for that. Things are all slammed together. I've got a million and one things I want to mention, and I've got a finite amount of time to do it, as you all know. They only give me a half an hour here, and as any listener knows, I could speak for, 30 days, let alone 30 minutes. So anyway, in the news these days, this is a funny story that I got to mention because I do share something in common with this gentleman, although it's not quite his inept nature. An Austrian roofer, actually, just after our last broadcast, I think it was the day after, an Austrian roofer named August, first name August, last name Vogel, an Austrian roofer named August Vogel slipped on a roof while on the job and ended up nailing himself to the roof through his testicle.
Oh, no.
Yeah. According to sources in Austria, the 59-year-old gentleman, August Vogel, of Jennersdorf, Austria, shot a 4-inch roofing nail / roofing spike right through his left testicle with the high-velocity compressed air nail gun and was thereafter unable to extract it or pull himself away from the roof. Yeah, this is the God's honest truth, folks. You can look this up. I'm not even making this up. Not everyone named August is completely inept, I guess. I hope I'm not, doing too much shame to the name. But Mr. Vogel he literally shot a 4-inch roofing nail right through his testicle. So not the skin, not the scrotum, but both. Scrotum, testicle, the whole 9 yards.
I really hope that all of our listeners have already eaten their dinner, because this is a very graphic story, and I'm sure that all the male listeners right now are cringing.
Cringing and holding their nether regions, yeah. Well, anyway, August Vogel, just to give you folks an idea, if you have a ruler or a tape measure laying around at home, pull it out and measure out 4 inches. Think about that, you know, with a razor sharp tip being shot at high velocity through any part of your anatomy, let alone somewhere as sensitive as your family jewels. Anyway, it was left to the emergency medics to climb up on the roof and separate August Vogel from the building, or roof, and after being whisked away to hospital via air ambulance, he's apparently recovering quite well following surgery.
Would you return to roofing after an accident like that?
I don't know. Imagine shooting yourself in the nuts with an air gun.
Maybe it's time for roofers to wear jocks.
Yeah. You know what? A cup in that environment isn't a bad thing, because you've got hammers all over the place. You've got nails. You've got nail guns. You've got all kinds of dangerous equipment. You know, if you're protecting the one head with a hard hat, why not protect the other one with a cup? That's what I'm saying.
Charming.
Yeah. But you know what, Barb, before the show, you made an excellent point. Really, what would have hurt more? The initial impact of the nail going through his testicle, or being removed from the roof? Barb's left speechless. She has no idea what to make of this situation. The poor girl. Anyway, folks, it's time to get down to the interview that I mentioned at the beginning of the show. I've got Scott Mitchell with me. We're going to have a little tete-a-tete. We're going to share a few thoughts and share a few laughs. So let's get down to that, Barb. What do you say?
Let's go.
All right, folks, I'm joined by London artist and musician Scott Mitchell. Scott, thanks a lot for making some time for the show.
Oh, you're very welcome. I really, really and truly appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Right off the bat, I have to clarify for the folks at home, although it's not entirely pertinent to the interview, you are a basketball fan, yes?
Absolutely.
So what did you think of the NBA final last week? Is it just me, or is it damn good to see the Boston Celtics back on top?
I think in the beginning of the playoffs, I looked around and saw the Lakers absolutely destroy Denver. Mm-hmm. Just ripped them to shreds. And then I saw Boston barely pull it out against Atlanta, and then watched the Cleveland series really closely and just kind of got going on the idea of a Lakers-Celtics series again. And then that came, and I just started watching, and it was some intense basketball. And you get to the end, like, the biggest comeback in finals history, and then a stomping in game six.
Yeah, I was going to say a 40-point blowout, which I believe was the biggest defeat in any single game in NBA finals history, too.
So they say. There were a couple of met or broken records. Ray Allen with the three-pointers in the last game.
Yeah, something like that. Either way, though, after the game, I know I was definitely thinking to myself, Kobe who?
Yeah, exactly. And I'll be honest, I'll feign ignorance. I sat there and I watched the end of the game and I saw the Kevin Garnett interview and he yells, "Anything is possible." And that was like a touching moment for me. Like that really meant something to me. But I clued in the next day. One of my friends told me, he's like, that's the Adidas slogan.
Absolutely.
And it suddenly meant just like a little bit less. If that was natural, that would have been such a powerful moment. But I guess in a perfect world, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, old KG, he was definitely going crazy. He was screaming to an incoherent degree.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's like all of a sudden he's drunk.
Yeah.
You just played a great game and are instantly intoxicated.
I guess at the end of the day, though, I'm not trying to slam Kobe. I mean, hell, the man's got an 81-point game under his belt, second only to Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point performance. So, I mean, obviously the guy's a great player. I'm just a little tired of the constant analogies with him and Michael Jordan and everything else.
It's like
Sidney Crosby with Wayne Gretzky. He's got a long, long way to go before he can make a fair comparison.
Oh, it's true. And I think, I mean, you can't knock Kobe. There's the MVP this year that really makes a statement. And he is a great player. But there were a couple points where the analysts on whichever network were carrying the games would say, this is the difference. As everyone compares Kobe Bryant to Michael Jordan, you think to yourself, Michael Jordan wouldn't be passing the ball right now. Michael Jordan is the primary point of their offense.
Yeah.
And Kobe's playing like just a dude.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't really say dude on TV that much, but
no, definitely not. Not during NBA coverage, anyway.
Not you.
So, Scott, as I mentioned at the start of the interview here, you are an artist and musician, first and foremost. What would you say is your earliest recollection of music as an art, and how did you originally take interest in sound and the way you can manipulate it, or the way it can be manipulated in general?
I played the bass guitar for a while when I was young and things like that. I remember from an instrumentally, like, playing music perspective, that's never really been the priority. Like, I look at it more in terms of hip-hop, buying an album that was really important, and getting into the idea of DJing. Like, I remember specifically standing in a Sam the Record Man that is clearly not in London, Ontario anymore, and debating between Bizarre Ride to the Far Side and Dr. Dre's The Chronic.
Right.
And picking the Far Side, like, not having the money for both, and that kind of seems like a choice that helped my direction. I was less gangster as a result. And
absolutely.
I think that's always best. I remember sitting with two CD players in my bedroom in my parents' old house in high school, like probably 1996, playing CDs back and forth, just trying to put together, like, have the idea be the important part, not really relying on technology. And now that was the same point when DJ Shadow came out with Introducing.
Oh, legendary, legendary album.
And yeah, listening to it, thinking, I don't know how he does this, but I'm going to try and get somewhere close to something like it. And I don't know, trying to be a rapper just sort of happened. Started hearing people like the Freestyle Fellowship and stuff, and I guess I kind of got distracted from that. Years later, I end up doing what I really wanted to in the beginning.
Now, what some folks may not know, Scott, is that you were the winner of the 2003 DMC Freestyle Comp right here in London. What can you tell the listeners about that?
That was probably adrenaline to the highest degree that I have experienced. And I may have experienced that level a few times otherwise, but that was a big one. I remember sending in a tape for them to decide whether or not the people were skilled enough, like your audition tape, and putting a lot of time into that, and having it go months before I heard back and just kind of giving up on it, and then hearing, okay, we're going to do it, and then getting to the actual event, and it's just kind of controlled chaos, like multiple competitions going on at the same time, people partying and loud rap music.
Yeah,
I remember our first round was simply a freestyle performance, which was something that I was really comfortable with, just whatever you wanted to do, and talking to the DJ beforehand and picking a really popular club song as the instrumental to use. It was 50 Cent in the Club, and a lot of people looked at me, knowing me and knowing that that's not my favorite artist and not really something I choose to listen to on my own. I just thought, it's got some intensity, and I got out there, and it started, and immediately my own friends are looking at me like, what's he doing? Because this is different even from what we're used to, and it went from there. The final rounds are mostly a blur. I remember two of them, the semi and then the final, and both times just looking at people like, I can't relent. I can't relent for even 1 second. I can't play nice. This is all or nothing, like, pretty much for the glory. There were prizes involved, but
yeah,
that wasn't what I was thinking of. It was a matter of you test yourself against somebody else, but then you have to test yourself against yourself. And
yeah, absolutely. And that was, of course, during the years of Scott Free, the MC Scott Free.
That definitely was. That was one of Scott Free's big moments, what that was.
So, speaking of that, what happened to Scott Free? I mean, people in London and southwestern Ontario, and I guess, you know, all over the world to an extent due to the World Wide Web, etc., know you as the former MC Scott Free. Like, how did Scott Free come about, and whatever happened to Scott Free?
Scott Free came about, it would have been probably a year or two before that competition, so 2001, 2002. I mean, if you look at the period of time from 1996, hearing some DJ Shadow and getting into stuff, and then time goes on within the next few years, starting to freestyle with some of my friends, and then starting to write songs and make beats for those songs and stuff. Scott Free just came from a friend of an old girlfriend that was dating one of my friends. It was it's like the OC, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
Seth Cohen thinks he's a rapper. And this girl listened to a couple of the tracks that I had done, and she called me Scott Free. And it stuck. It made sense. It suited the style of what I was doing, and the approach to it, and everything else. And it worked for a long time. It became the sort of thing where, I don't want to flatter myself or sound like I was Hollywood, but you walk down the street, even in your hometown, and someone you don't know calls you by that name.
Yeah.
It's flattering and ultimately kind of shocking, because I felt like then the two things are separate. Like, this is an idea, a character, sort of, and this is my everyday life. And to have the one jump into the other so boldly is kind of cool.
No, absolutely. And, well, I mean, like you said, hometown, it's still London. It's still 500,000 people. I mean, we're not living in Lobo, Ontario.
It's true.
You know, we're not in a one-horse town. We have more than one saloon.
It's true. I've been to all three of them.
And seen both of your friends at each one?
It's true. Sometimes on the same night, I hear the same song twice.
Whoa.
Three times some nights.
So Scott Free was the big thing. That's what people knew you for several years. So what happened to Scott Free? Where did Scott Free go? And is he on the face of a milk carton anywhere now? Or what happened?
Scott Free made an album called We'll Rap for Fun shortly after that competition and made really no effort for that to get heard. It really didn't involve all the work that it should have. And, I mean, it was fun to do. Like, We'll Rap for Fun. Some of my friends still listen to it once in a while. I had a friend move out west and tell me that he played that record and enjoyed it, forgot all about it, and just found it in a bunch of stuff that he packed that he didn't throw away, and how he'd never listened to it before. Like, I made it and he didn't listen to it. And, hey, that's cool. Like, if it's getting listened to at all.
It's cool, but does it also hurt that he never listened to it before?
Not really. I feel like if I had really devoted a lot of time and energy to it, I would have been a little bit more upset about that. But I was actually discussing with a friend of mine today how my brother and I, having an interest in music and specifically DJing and hip-hop culture for years, it provided an interesting dynamic because he never told me he liked anything that I had done unless he really liked it.
Right.
So for probably the first 8 years that I was doing anything, I never got any positive reinforcement from him. And it was ultimately kind of depressing at the time. But when I look back on it, I'm glad I didn't have a false sense of accomplishment or false sense of skill going through the early part. I had to learn exactly how difficult it's going to be. The time when you most want to give up is when your work will probably count the most. If you can change that frustration of not getting anywhere today into something new or working with something a little older, like reworking an old idea, I mean, that's where I think you're going to really do it. Like a Celtics 23-point comeback.
Absolutely.
You got to play your best when you're at your lowest.
I think. No, and that's very, very well put, very, very eloquent. You know, as a musician myself, I've always marveled at how diverse, you know, our influences and musical preferences can be. So in relation to that, what would you say is your favorite music, say, right now? Or what are you listening to the most as far as what band or a particular album? Like what's getting played out on Scott Mitchell's stereo these days?
In Her Music Box by Atmosphere from When Life Gives You Lemons. I'm obviously unable to form a complete sentence to describe it. I feel like everyone should listen to it.
I think anybody that knows hip-hop knows that Atmosphere is pretty much at the top of the hip-hop echelon.
It's true. I mean, their music's not for everyone, but for those people that really enjoy it, they've changed the way I look at hip-hop music now.
Mm. And I think social issues too, right?
It's true. And girlfriend problems, really.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that, and they're at a point now in the catalog that they're making fun of earlier music and how depressing it was over a specific girl. And to be honest, this is a part of the reason why I ceased to write rap lyrics at all, is I found a lot of what I was doing was the same subject matter and writing sad songs about girls or like optimistic songs about girls I like that I hadn't screwed things up with yet.
So, I was going to say, wait a minute, I'm going to finish that sentence. Optimistic songs about girls I hadn't screwed things up with.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to stop after. Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
You know what's strange about that, though?
From what's that?
The post Scott Free days, because I found someone else using that name on the internet. Again, you say the World Wide Web music is accessible. So I find people in England on Soulseek who have my album on there, and that surprises me. But
yeah,
then I find somebody
sure.
using the same name whose image and sound and everything is totally unique and totally fitting that person, but I don't want to have the same name as somebody who's doing that. I don't really want to have the same name as anybody else.
Well, no, for sure. I think you want to be an individual, especially if you're an individual by nature. You want to be the same way as far as your representation goes.
Oh, it's definitely true.
So the big thing right now is you've just released a new album entitled Grown Man Business. And for those listening, I'm not speaking in Ebonics. I'm not taking up a new form of diction here. It is Grown Man Business, BIDNESS, play on the word business, of course. What can you tell folks about the title and what the album's all about in regard to its genre or style of music and what sort of creative influence brought everything about with Grown Man Business?
Grown Man Business, it was ultimately a reaction to similar girl problems mm-hmm. that a friend of mine and I were having. Mm-hmm. And just knowing that I sort of had to take the high road and facilitate things that I didn't want to have happen. It's like, this is how it needs to go, and I need to be the one to get it there.
Okay.
Because some of the people that you're dealing with at different times, you know, some people have a tough time talking about personal things.
Right.
Especially when it's like a decision making. You can talk to your friends about it in an advice perspective, but when it comes down to having that conversation about, you know, I don't think we should do this anymore,
right.
for an example, people get scared, and it doesn't happen sometimes. Go through a couple conversations and decide, like, yo, this is grown man business. And specifically saying, not business, this is business.
Yeah.
It just seemed like there's less room for messing around if you call it business. And it really tells the story. It goes from day one of being knee-deep in hip-hop and not really having time for anything else to really learning to grow up as a person in a part of a generation that really we get to grow up halfway.
Yeah.
A lot of us.
Yeah, it's true. We don't necessarily face the same hardship as the generations before us.
It's true.
And we're fortunate for that, obviously.
It's true. And we have amenities that people enjoy at an age where previous generations, I don't think, always find it appropriate.
Mm.
I have friends who are in their 30s who are some of the most skilled video game players you've ever seen. And they've got a $500 or $600 video game system. And I don't know any 10-year-old kid that can afford that.
But yeah, true.
Do my grandparents think that's cool that your recreational time is spent playing video games?
Especially after the age of 30.
Exactly. It's like that Shad album, The Old Prince, right at the beginning. It says, this is a story of an old prince, and the old prince had a problem. I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember the lyric exactly, but the problem was the prince was old. The prince isn't supposed to get old. He's supposed to grow up and become king. That was like a punch in the stomach. I remember hearing that and saying, ooh, it applies to me whether I want to admit it or not.
Yeah, very, very true. Just a quick point in reference to Grown Man Business. Is there anything in particular as far as a cause or causes in the world right now that you're attempting to express, you know, your feelings about through this music or through this album, whether it's, you know, political or otherwise?
Not anything incredibly political. I feel like it's looking at yourself in a very realistic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that you're not so comfortable about. Everybody's got something they've done in the back of their mind or
right.
something that makes you self-conscious. And it's a matter of looking at that and reminding yourself that everybody else you know has a thing like that too. And really, I guess for myself, and I don't want to say isolate, I guess separate interactions and different places in life. I mean, my daytime, as I call it, the square job, is very separate from music and things like that, because when I come home from a day at the office, so to speak, I'm not in the same state of mind as I need to be to sit down and sample a record and make it into something new. With certain people, you deal with one person that's incredibly frustrating and is upset about personal things and taking it out on you, and then you deal with somebody else, and it's very easy for a person, especially I think in the Western world, to turn around and take that to somebody else. The guy at the variety store was rude to me, so I'm going to be rude to the lady at the fast food stand. And it's such an almost trivial thing, but I think the more you can tailor your actions, like make anything interesting, if you pay enough attention, any experience really, no matter what it is, if you try to do that better than you did it yesterday, while still being an honest version of yourself, and really Grown Man Business is about just that, being honest with yourself. There's a sort of a hidden story specifically relating to more recent times, as opposed to looking at the last few years, that goes along with that. And that's the part for me that when I listen to it, that's what catches me. And I don't think it could have happened any other way. I have to sit down and think, I started this album as one person and I finished it as another. Friends came and went. Relationships changed. You grow as a person and you go for the better.
Absolutely. Now, in relation to that, for the listeners that are interested in picking up the album, how can they get their mitts on a copy, and where can they find the album?
The album right now is very limited in its distribution, but that's out of a general sense of community in London. It's at Grooves on Clarence Street, and I feel that I don't know the exact address, but most people are generally aware. It's across from Rockwaters.
Or where Rockwaters used to be, anyway. Yeah, right on Clarence Street, right across from the Galleria downtown.
Yeah, it's available there in the CD section. I feel like with the way the music industry's gone lately, support the independent store, because it's going to have something a little more adventurous, a little harder to track down. there's samples on MySpace. I don't know if people even use MySpace anymore. I put them up the other day. But
okay. What's the URL for that? It's myspace.com/...
Scotty Doesn't Know Music.
Okay, so that's www.myspace.com/Scotty Doesn't Know Music. All one word?
All one word, all lowercase. I just got frustrated the day I set that up because anything brief that I wanted to use was obviously taken. And it's a reference to the song Scotty Doesn't Know from a relatively popular motion picture. And
yeah, exactly.
Inappropriate comedy, really.
So, Scott, how does this sound to you? How about the first listener that emails me after the show or during the show? How about the first person that I get an email from to august@chrwradio.com? First person that shoots me an email, how about we give that person an autographed copy of the album? What do you say to that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely?
Absolutely.
All right, folks. So you heard it. The first person that sends me an email to august@chrwradio.com, the same email address everybody's so kind to hit me up with the comments and questions and whatnot. First person that sends me an email gets an autographed copy of the album right here from Mr. Scott Mitchell himself. Well, Scott, I greatly appreciate you making time for the interview. Again, like I said, for those listeners that are interested in picking up a copy of Grown Man Business or, getting to know more about you and your art and your music, what's the best way for people to contact you? Do you have an email address or website to visit?
The best way that, for things like that, would probably be MySpace right now. I don't have a website of my own currently.
Okay, yeah.
And simply because my approach now is... when it's really time for something like that, it's going to be executed well.
What about email?
Email, it's kind of comical because I never really lost it altogether. Scott Free, ASC, all lowercase, no spaces, anything like that, at hotmail.com.
There is still a little bit of Scott Free left out there.
You know what? There definitely is.
Scott, like I said, I greatly appreciate you making some time for the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for listening, and we are all out of time for another episode of Full Frontal right here on CHRW 94.9 FM. If you don't like kicking it old school via radio, you can also catch us on channel 943 with Rogers Digital Cable, or online anywhere in the world at chrwradio.com every other Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Until then, if you have questions for myself, for Barb, or a past guest, email me at august@chrwradio.com or visit me online at www.augustdonnelly.com. Remember, be who you are, no matter where you might find yourself, because without you, you're lost.
This episode of Full Frontal is dedicated to the great George Carlin. Thank you for opening our eyes.